Welcome to Our Voices, Our Future, the podcast where we amplify the voices driving change in gender equity, medicine, and beyond. Brought to you by the Gender Equity Task Force, a committee of the American Medical Women's Association, we're here to challenge norms, break barriers, and ignite conversations that matter. I'm Megan Etze, and in each episode, we'll bring you candid discussions with leaders, changemakers, and advocates, working to create a more inclusive and just world. No more silence, no more waiting. Let's get to it. Today, we're welcoming Dr. Roberta Gebhardt, who is an inspiring leader, mentor, and lifelong advocate for gender equity in medicine. A family practice physician based in Western New York, she founded the AMWA Gender Equity Task Force in 2010, paving the way for systemic change across the profession. As the past president of the American Medical Women's Association, past representative of the AMA Women's Physicians Section Governing Council from 2020 to 2024, and current AMWA alternative delegate to the AMA House of Delegates, Dr. Gebhardt has championed the voices of more than 100,000 women physicians nationwide. She serves on the board of directors for Physician Just Equity, providing compassionate peer support for physicians facing workplace inequities, and has been a dedicated member of the UB Jacobs School of Medicine Admissions Committee for over two decades. Dr. Gebhardt's unwavering commitment, mentorship, and leadership continue to inspire generations of women physicians to advocate boldly and lead with purpose. Thanks for being here, Dr. Gebhardt.
Thank you for the introduction.
Yeah, so can you just kind of start by sharing a bit about your journey, what inspired you to pursue not only medicine, but eventually to become such a strong advocate for gender equity in the field?
Sure. When I was really young, like kindergarten, I wanted to be a medical mission sister. So basically a doctor who's a nun and sings also. So that was my goal when I first thought about kindergartner. Then I found about boys, and that kind of blew that off. The idea of, you know, becoming a physician. I always wanted to do that. And there's nobody in my family. I'm the first person in my family to graduate from college.
Wow.
My family, you know, is a doctor or had any professional training. But I just always wanted to be a doctor, and somehow I made it here. It was a lot of work, but I did it. I think what inspired me is mostly first of all, my mother, because she always told me that I could be whatever I wanted to. So, and secondly, just, you know, going to doctors, and in our community, most of the doctors were foreign medical grads. So a lot of them did not speak English. So they were originally from that country, and they would come here, and because, you know, they were here under a visa, they had to work in the rural areas. So most of the doctors, you know, in my community were foreign medical graduates who didn't speak English very well. So it was very difficult to communicate with them. And then I just thought that I could help along those lines for sure. So I made it to medical school. I ended up applying the third time is when I got in, and I applied to osteopathic schools as well. So I got into an osteopathic medical school, and just managed to graduate, do my residency, and get done and practicing family medicine.
Can you tell us a little bit about what then had led you to become a strong advocate more in the gender equity part once you got into medicine and practicing?
I just noticed that when I was working with other doctors, even as a medical student, that like I was working with a doctor who shared an office with two male doctors, and she would, like, at the end of the day, she'd have a huge pile of messages to get back to, but the nursing staff would take care of it for the guys. So they would basically just be able to finish their office and be able to go home. But she had to answer all these questions at the end of the day. And I just didn't think that was very fair that they were, you know, helping the guys out, but not helping her. That was just like one example, but, you know, generally there were not a lot of women mentors when I was going through school. Very few actually in the osteopathic medical schools at the time, but, you know, even I trained in allopathic programs, and there just wasn't a whole lot of mentors that you know could help you out. And just things that I experienced, you know, when I was training, where, you know, the guys were always chosen and the women were not. Just you know, sexual harassment sort of things. I remember when I was pregnant with my first child, I was working with the orthopedic team. I was a medical student, and literally they would all walk by and pat my belly on their way by, and I just things that I didn't think were appropriate, but you just kind of So I just made a decision that I wanted to change things.
So moving forward a little bit, can you kind of tell us what motivated you to found the Gender Equity Task Force back in 2010, and what were some of like the early challenges that you faced in getting all this started?
AMWA used to have a gender equity task force, but I just knew that it existed. I didn't really know anything about it at all, except for that. Well, the only thing I knew about it is they had a dedicated line, so they would advertise it, and somebody could just call that number and get help. That's all I knew about it. And I decided that I wanted to get that restarted and start. So it had been years since they'd been doing it. So actually, I had belonged to AMWA for like 20 years, and I don't believe they did it at that point. And I don't believe they had done it during the 20 years that I was involved. I just heard about it. So I had a friend, Joyce Brock, who encouraged me and supported me in doing that. And there was another woman, I cannot remember her last name, I'm sorry, but her first name was Margaret. And so we were the three attendings that, got together and helped start it. But basically, they just kind of supported me, and I went to the board and asked to get it started. And they allowed me to do it. And then we added Linda Brodsky, who was actually my co-chair. So there were four physicians, and then I think we only had one medical student at the time. And so we basically just got started, and we were meeting every week at the beginning, and then every other week, and as we got to know each other, and then once a month after that. Some of the challenges were sometimes Linda and I would be the only ones that showed up for the meeting, and so she would take notes, and I would kind of run the meeting, even though it was just two of us. And we actually were very productive, even when there was only two of us. But it was hard to get people to come to the meetings, and they always wanted to change it to a different day. And every time we tried to change it to a different day for an individual person who said, "I will definitely come, but I can only come on Tuesdays." So we changed it to Tuesdays, and they would never show up. And we'd be so we just kind of kept going back to Fridays at 5, because that's what worked out best for Linda and I. And we tried to change it one more time, and then we back to Fridays at 5. So we ended up changing it now to the first Tuesday of the month, because the co-chair at that time could make it at that time. And again, the same sort of thing, if you just didn't come most of the time. But anyways, we just continued to meet. So that was one, barrier, one challenge that we faced, was, getting people to come, and getting a time that people could make it. But that was probably the main thing, and just getting people to get involved and actually do things, which is not a problem at all right now, but it was like, this is what, 15 years into it, so it's taken a while to get it so that, there are people that are involved, and other people have ideas, and so I think it's very functional right now, but it took a long time to get there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool to hear that story of it coming up, because now just being here for the past year, I see the task force does a lot. So those early years of only hearing about two people showing up is like crazy to me, because it's so not that now, which is very cool.
Yeah. Well, the other challenge was, like, I kind of had to do everything. So like I had to set up the meetings, and set up that we actually at the beginning we just met on the phone. So
Oh.
I had to set up the meeting, the calls and the meetings and things like that. And that was a hassle. And then like at least Linda did the notes. So that's like my least favorite thing to do. So that worked out really well. But the having the challenge of, having to set up the meetings myself, and that was a challenge as well. Not having any.
So, yeah, can we kind of talk a little bit how it's evolved over the years, and what are some of the accomplishments of the Gender Equity Task Force that you have kind of been most proud of in terms of its either impact on policy or culture within medicine? Like, what are kind of the things that we have attacked that you've been very proud of?
I think, the research that we've done, and the publications that we've done have been the things that I've most been most proud of, because that, affects other people, and they read it, and they hear about it, and they can take our ideas and move on with them in their institutions. So I think that's been the most accomplishment that I've been most proud of. I was also involved with Time's Up Healthcare. And that was an also, as this is a nationwide group that worked on, and most of what we did that worked was publications. So when we started doing that, we were kind of doing publications with both, and I thought that was really helpful. So.
So, talking a little more about Time's Up Healthcare and the AMA work that you have done, what have those collaborations that you've kind of had throughout life taught you about driving change more at that institutional level?
With the AMA, I was on the women physician section. So there were over 100,000 women physicians in the AMA, and there were eight of us that represented those folks. And the things that we did were very much like what we do in AMWA, but because AMWA started the AMA women physician section, we are the only organization that has a seat at their table. So they have representatives from AMA, but they overall, and then they have some members at large, but we're the only ones that actually have a representative to that group from the AMWA. So that was very helpful. Times Up Healthcare was really exciting, and I've got some of my best friends that I've met through that organization. Unfortunately, it ended prematurely, but it was great to get, there were publications that we were involved in with people that we had never met before, and we just worked together and got some things published. And that always changes things because people read it and they think, oh, this is a great idea. Let me move forward with doing that in my institution, or just even the awareness that it exists. So I think, driving change at the institutional level, you actually get the idea from reading, reading things and reading about the work that we've done. I thought was very helpful. So.
So, looking at yourself more holistically and just you and less the work that you've done with these different organizations, can you tell us a little bit how this mentorship that you saw when you first started was not around and present, and community that you've built with these people that you talk about from these different places have helped shape not only your own career, but the role that we get from these people playing in advancing in gender equity for future generations of these women that we have in medicine?
I think that, people like Linda Brodsky, who was a very strong mentor of mine, she was my co-chair, but she had actually filed, she found out when she was sitting on the search committee for the medical school, they were searching for the chair of the department, and she was told that she was not chair, not chair. She was not the right person to be chair, but when she opened the booklets and the on each person in the department, they have like a file. She found out that she was making 20% of what the men were making, not 20% less, but 20% of what the men were making. And so
Oh.
she went about, and I actually, believe it or not, I've actually heard of people in other programs that did the same thing. There was a woman urologist that had mentored a man all the way through his training, and she was a full professor at her institution. And when he came to join after he finished his residency and his fellowship, when he came to join, he asked, "Hey, would you mind looking at my contract?" And she found out that he was being offered, and that's not even negotiated. This is like right off the bat. So you always started a negotiation part, and then you started at a certain point, then you negotiate up to a higher point.
Right.
And he was being offered $175,000 a year more than she was making.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, it's not uncommon. It happens. And so, just knowing that that exists, it helps me a lot in being able to talk to people about negotiation, because people don't like to negotiate, especially women don't like to negotiate. And just talking to them about negotiation and showing them, like with me, one of my positions, they offered 50,000. When my friend stayed on with them negotiating, she got them up to 130,000. So if they can afford to pay you 130,000, but they're only offering you 50,000, it just seems, kind of useless. And so, she ended up not going there either, but there is wiggle room there, and they always start with a low number, hoping that you'll take it. And there's some people that actually believe that's why women actually get paid less, because they don't negotiate. But in my experience, I don't think that's the whole thing, because in one of my positions, I negotiated I was trying to negotiate with the service unit director at the VA, and he said there's absolutely no wiggle room with regards to salary. And I guess I took him at face value because I didn't think he'd be lying to me. And then I found out when I got there that there was a male who had much less experience than I did. He had only graduated a year. I had been doing hospitals work for like 13 years at that point, and he was getting paid 10,000 a year more than I was making. And I just found out because I asked him. I said, "Hey, I just wanted to know, if one of my student or one of my residents wants to come here and apply for a job, can you tell me what you're making so I can tell him where to start with negotiations?" And he said he when he gave me what he was making was 10,000 a year more than I was making, and I was like in shock. I really was, but I ended up leaving that program because I just didn't think I was right. So I think that just the whole idea about negotiating, women have to kind of get over that. But I don't think that's all there is. I think there are other things that affect, what they're being worth. I mean, during my training, there didn't happen to me, but other people were being told, well, your husband's a doctor. We can afford to pay you less because, he can support you, and those sorts of things, which are really ridiculous.
Have you heard of, oh, you can't see the book. It's called Women Don't Ask: Negotiation and the Gender Divide.
Yes. So
Yes.
I actually, we our students brilliantly had them speak had Sarah Lashever speak at one of our meetings
Oh.
years back, and so I've actually used the same skills that they've used, because what they were doing is getting like insurance companies to pay for it. So I got our malpractice insurance company to bring Sarah Lashever here to Buffalo to do a talk. And she is absolutely amazing. They're both amazing. So the first part is women don't ask, and the second part of the book is ask for it. And then the second part of the book is really good because they have like a boot camp, and the whole idea is that you start asking for things that aren't important. So, for example, when I read that, I brought some roses for the folks on my admission on my committee, and I stopped at the place where I got the roses, and I said, "Hey, can you give me some water bottles to put them in?" And they were like $2 a piece, and they gave me, however many water bottles to go with the number of roses that I had, just for free. But if I didn't ask, I wouldn't have known that, right? And
Yeah.
I negotiated for a vehicle when we were came when we were visiting down in Florida, and I got them talked down $1,300. And it took me a while. It was almost 2 hours that I did the negotiations, and my family was going crazy. But I said, "Well, look, guys, we got an extra $1,300 to spend on vacation now."
Yeah.
So negotiating on things that aren't important, so that you feel comfortable with it when it comes to talking about your job, your salary. And there are other things to negotiate as well. It's not just salary. It could be your hours. So there's only one person in our department when I was at the university that had every Friday off. Well, he negotiated. He worked. He said, "Hey, how about if I work Wednesday night? Can I take Friday off? Because you get a half a day for administrative time." And all of us were required to actually come to the office for our administrative time. But because he negotiated ahead of time, he didn't have to come in the office at all on Fridays. So even though he was being paid full time, we had to come in during our administrative time, but he never did. So it's all about negotiation, and you just have to, you can negotiate for more time off. You can negotiate for extra staff if you're doing research. You can negotiate for space to do your research. There are all kinds of things you can negotiate for, and you just have to have your eyes open to it, and be able to think about what it is that you want and what's going to make you happy. It's helpful sometimes to have somebody, even if they're not negotiating for you, to kind of bounce things off of. So I've had somebody negotiate for me. There were different people, and one of them was able to negotiate. They offered me 80,000, and they negotiated up to 100,000 for me. I was supposed to be doing a 5 day work week. They got me to a 4 day work week, and instead of 4 weeks of vacation, I got six, including my CME. And so they got all that negotiation, and it only cost me like $200 to hire them to help me. And so there's lots of different ways to do it, but you have to negotiate. I mean, it's not all about negotiation with regards to the inequities, but that's part of it for sure.
I feel like even having this knowledge is power until this conversation right now. Like, I've talked to people about negotiating things, and I didn't even know till right now that you can like hire people to help you negotiate. I feel like just knowing these things is so much power, and that's why things like these podcasts are so important, right? Because how are we supposed to know about these things otherwise, unless we have these mentors like you in our lives telling us the This is how the world goes. Yeah.
And there's a group up in Montana that works with, young people, to help them with their initial negotiations for program or for their jobs. And I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's Girl Boss or something like that. And they actually teach you the skills, and then you can go over it with them, but they kind of teach you how to do it. So you can do the negotiation, but they'll train you to do that, which is really good, but it kind of helps you open your eyes to the things that are available to you. So, like, I had a friend who she was in private practice, but basically she put her kids on the bus in the morning. She drove to her office. She saw patients from like 9 until 3. No, it wasn't 3, till whatever time it was, she had to get her kids off the bus. But she saw them straight through. She didn't stop for lunch. So from 9 until like 2:30. And then she got home in time to get her kids off the bus. And she stayed one day late. So she was out by 2:30 every day except Wednesdays. So she stayed until like 4:30 on Wednesdays, and that was her late day. But that, it was her own private practice, and she could do what she wanted, and it worked out well for her. Her husband, was a oral surgeon, and so he made a good salary, and so between the two of them, they were able to do what they needed to do. So she had the luxury of being able to do that. People that are, part of one salary families don't always have that luxury, but she did, because she and it was also her own practice. So there's lots of things you can negotiate for, and lots of things that you can kind of build your own practice and your own mind of what you want to do.
Absolutely. So, can you kind of tell us, you've been doing this work for a while, right? How have you continued to be inspired, especially as you see not only like new generations of physicians stepping into the advocacy and the good things that are happening, but even as you're seeing still these things you've been fighting for years have remained persistent, and maybe you have not seen as much change as you want. How have you kind of like kept this motivation and inspiration?
My daughter is 28, and I just don't want her to see her going through what I'm going through. And so I just feel that it's really important to change the world if we can. And it's very difficult with our current administration to make any headway. But we finally got Biden to ratify the ERA. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the librarian to sign off on it, but I think that my daughter, just knowing her and what I'd like to see her life to be different, I just keep fighting to make things equal. And the students and residents on the medical on the gender equity task force are very inspiring, and they keep me enjoying what I'm doing.
I love that. That's awesome. So finally, can you just give us some advice? What advice would you give to medical students, these early career physicians who want to be a part of this lasting, meaningful change that we need to eventually succeed gender equity one day?
I think that standing up for yourself is important, but you have to pick your battles. So you don't want to be seen as the person that's always fighting over things. So you just have to pick the important things to fight about, and not everything. And it's really important that you learn to negotiate, and that you negotiate. It's not all about the negotiation, but if you do not negotiate, you will be leaving money at the table, because anytime it even makes an offer to you, there's money there that they have. They don't tell you the top number. They just tell you this is what we're offering you, and there's always money there to go up. And so if you don't know that, you're not going to negotiate. But and if you don't negotiate, you'll definitely be making less money. And men are much more likely to negotiate. It's just a difference between men and women. Women don't want to, make it seem like they don't want to, like with me, when I had them negotiating for me in Ohio, the program I was in, I was going into the I was the only woman physician that's going to be practicing in that county. They couldn't get my name right. They couldn't get anything right. They put, Dr. Rebecca Gebhard. They put MD instead of DO. They put misses. I mean, it was just crazy. And so I just figured, well, if I had a guy negotiating, that they wouldn't do that to him. And I was able to walk in, so I couldn't be the bad guy with negotiations because he had done all the negotiations, and I could just walk in and start working and not have that over my head. So I just think that, knowing that there are other people that can do the negotiations for you is important. I think knowing that the physician just equity is there to help if you do get in problems in your work, whether you're being like, lots of times women will have something bad happen to them at work. One of the fellows that we work with got pushed by an attending, and she's the one that got fired because she complained that this attending pushed her. And so, just knowing that the physician just equity is available to help you when you're having problems in your career. Usually the people that come to them is, usually women, very often women of color. There are some men that we've had come, but mostly women. And it has a lot to do with just being discriminated against, and you bring up something, and then they decide, well, who does she think she is, telling us to do it this way or whatever. And then they just get rid of you, or just make your life really miserable. So just knowing that there's support out there for you.
Thank you. I love it. Just comes down to knowing what you need to know to get through, right? And then choosing your battle. I love how you said that. Like, you have to choose what you're going to fight for. There's so many aspects that I've learned from being on the committee that we have a long way to go before we reach gender equity. But I think if everybody chooses a battle, then together we can take them all down one at a time, right?
Yeah, well, I was the 11th of 13 women fired in my department when I was at the university. 11 of 13, for no reason. There's no reason I was fired. And the chair of the department, when he was forced, so what I did was I hired a private investigator. And the reason why they let me go is because I was complaining because one of the program director was sleeping with one of the residents, and he was married with children. She was married as well. And I basically said only to one person, I didn't say it to a large group, I just said to one person, I said, I think it's ridiculous that we're hiring Vonda just because she's sleeping with Brian. We have three other residents who make much better faculty than she would. And they fired me and hired her with my salary. And one of the women that I was talking to that was still in the department, she's like, I just want to let you know that I support you, but I have to stay under the radar. I'm raising children on my own, and I can't not be working. So I don't say I said anything, but I just want you to know that I'm supporting you. And I think that some people are going to be more likely to speak up than others. I did actually get my job back. I hired a private investigator who followed this couple from a restaurant to a liquor store to a hotel, complete with videotape, so that I was able to share that with the university. And they basically told the chair that he had to hire me back. So I'm taking my job back.
You
But it
fought
was
your battle.
my battle, yes, that was important to me. And the reason why I went back was because I wanted people to know that I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he fired me, I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Gebhardt. This has been a great conversation. I think you have so many stories, and we're going to have you on so many episodes. But this has been a nice little intro to your life and just knowing who you are and getting to know you a little bit more on the podcast.
The other thing that I would encourage people to do is to join AMWA and to stay members of AMWA throughout their career. You can actually just get a lifetime membership, and then you never have to pay again after that. But just encourage people to stay as members of AMWA, because what you're doing, and even if you don't have time to attend meetings and things like that, you're supporting the organization, the oldest women physician organization in the world. We actually started the Medical Women's International 106 years ago. And so we were older than them because we started them. And it's good to support this group, because if you don't have time to mentor, we do the mentoring. It helps the students with scholarships and things like that. And just really encourage everybody to as students to join, but very often the students will fall off after they've gotten all this mentoring. We just encourage everybody to stay in for the long run, because that will help change the world, honestly.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
So that's a wrap on this episode of Our Voices, Our Future. We hope today's conversation inspired you, challenged you, and reminded you of the power of raising your voice. The fight for equity doesn't stop here. Join us in the movement. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and if you love this episode, share it with someone who needs to hear it. Until next time, stay bold, stay vocal, and keep the conversation going. This is Our Voices, Our Future.